Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Window Watch. Connor Southwell joined by Paddy Davitt to speak about all the Norwich City happenings in and out this transfer window. Pad, I guess we better start with the one that's been confirmed today. Billy Gilmore, season-long loan from Chelsea. He comes with praise from pretty much anyone. If you Google any top footballer or ex-footballer or pundit or manager, so Alex Ferguson, Roy Keane, Patrick Vieira, etc. He seems to have been praised, well, dramatically by all of those, Graeme Souness as well. Talk to us a little bit about that addition. Norwich City have obviously beaten off a fair bit of competition to land him. You first reported the interest, a couple of weeks ago now. Talk to us a little bit about that addition and Billy Gilmore more generally.
Well, it's a statement of intent, Connor. Yeah, absolutely. For those reasons and that cast list of, you know, people queuing up, luminaries of the game and players who knew what it took to be an excellent central midfielder as well. You know, Souness, Keane, Vieira, I'll take that all day long if that's on my CV. And I'm a young up-and-coming centre-mid. I think the best thing I've seen in the last couple of hours, actually, since he was... Well, two things, actually. One is actually, if you go on Chelsea's official website confirming the news that he's moving to Norwich, they label him as one of the best British talents in recent seasons. And I think anybody who saw him, you know, bossing that game at Wembley, you know, he was credited as the man of the match, wasn't he? That 0-0 Euro 2020 draw against players like Declan Rice and Mason Mount, his club mate at Chelsea, and Calvin Phillips. The first two of those, who've gone on and got huge praise for their role against Germany the other night. He was the boss that night against them at Wembley. It is such an exciting... If you're a Norwich fan today, and you can see the reaction since it's actually been confirmed, not since we saw him in a Norwich kit at Norwich's training ground yesterday. I think the fallout from that will continue to rumble on. But since he officially was unveiled this morning, you know, the praise is lavish, really. And the other thing, like I say, the Chelsea statement, I thought, caught my eye, that he is one of the best British young talents. But also, there was an Norwich fan, and I put it into our fan reaction story. It's on pinken.com now, that by way of a comparative, where we are with Norwich now from when Farker and Webber first arrived, I think, was it July or June 2017, James Husband arrived, and now July 2021, Billy Gilmore arrives. Now, fair play to James Husband. He's got his career going again. I think he's in the Championship, isn't he? He came up through the playoffs with Blackpool, so good luck to him. No disrespect is meant, but if you're going from signing James Husband to Billy Gilmore, you know the wheel has turned if you're a Norwich fan. So, you know, it underlines a lot of things for me, I think, about how Norwich are going to attack this, that it isn't going to be, oh my God, can we cling on to 17th or better? They are constructing or trying to construct a squad. And we've seen Gilmore's the headline, but there's been a lot of action this week in and out. And it all flows into less in terms of numbers, but raising the quality threshold. And I don't think, yes, he's 20. Yes, he doesn't have a huge amount of Premier League experience. So as Daniel said in the official statement, the quotes, let's just, you know, take a step back. He's a very young man, still finding his way. But that all said, if Keane, Ferguson, Vieira, Tuchel all rate this guy highly, then, you know, they know what they're talking about. So Norwich have acquired a very, very exciting talent. And for me, it's a signal that they want to get into the Premier League. They want to be more than competitive and they want to do more to stay up. So, yeah, let the good times roll, Connor.
Absolutely. If you want to read all the quotes on Gilmore from those people that we've mentioned, and there's a few others as well, Cesc Fabregas, Frank Lampard, I left Jamie Redknapp out. I thought that was probably wise. There's a nice summary there, a bit from Jose Mourinho as well. Lots of exciting words coming from a lot of people within the game who certainly know what it takes to be a very good midfielder. So that's good to see. We'll delve into Billy Gilmore a bit more in a second. If you've got any questions, comments, we'll be with you for about half an hour or so, probably slightly longer than that. Get them into the chat below and we'll try and get through as many as we can. I'm just excited, Pad, by how many people are excited by the fact that Window Watch was coming on. I mean, we've got...
I don't think that's the case, Connor. I think you're overplaying our influence here, mate.
Well, we've got Ben Ambrose saying, hurry up, lads, I'm getting restless. We've got Canaries TV saying, son's crying, just want Window Watches before we've gone live. So I think we've given the people what they want this afternoon.
What a disappointment when it actually goes live, Connor. What can we do? You can only apologise for this double act.
Well, exactly. There you go. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we can answer your questions and give you a little bit of insight into Norwich City's transfer window. Let's talk a little bit more about Billy Gilmore then, Pads. In terms of Norwich City's midfield, I think, you know, you don't need to be an expert to realise it's pretty thin on the ground. It's what Jakob Sorensen, Lucas Rupp and Kenny McLean, they're Norwich City's three midfield options. Billy Gilmore becomes the fourth. They're looking for another, and then Ollie Skip, if they can obviously get him back on loan. How do you think the dynamic will look with Billy Gilmore in there? Because he's someone who in the Premier League has largely played in a 4-3-3, largely under Frank Lampard. He's someone who has, obviously at the moment, got 200 more minutes in the Premier League than Ollie Skip, for example, and is 9 months younger. So kind of good and bad, I suppose. But does it hint to you towards a sort of change of system or a change of approach in how Norwich are going to sort of look at their central midfield?
Well, I mean, I know, Connor, one of these recent broadcasts, I mean, you've got a sense that it might, not just Billy Gilmore, but Rashica coming as well, and Emi Buendia going. Does that it? Underline or demonstrate maybe more a counter-attacking type of model. I can see that, but I just think flexibility will be the key to everything that Norwich are trying to do this season. And that's the type of player, the systems they operate, how Farker approaches the task as well. Off the pitch, the whole sports science and fitness side that Weber talked about in terms of if you can have less actual bodies in the building, you need to keep them fitter and keep them healthy. I just think if we narrow that back down to Billy Gilmore and what this means for Norwich's midfield, I don't think it means per se that, you know, it's either A, going to be wedded to complete dominating games through possession or the counter-attacking. I just think there's going to be occasions in the Premier League where they'll need to be able to prioritise one over the other, and that'll inevitably be, you play the better sides, are they going to dominate possession against the Man City? No, is the answer, even with Billy Gilmore in the side. So within the confines of the central midfield, you're going to need, there'll be occasions both in terms of from game to game and during games where you'll need to be a bit better without the ball and protecting your back four and that combative streak. And then inevitably, and I thought it was interesting again that you go back to the signing quotes, Billy Gilmore himself said, having spoken to Farker, he wants to play the style of football I like, which is getting the ball down, possession-based, progressive. So I don't see suddenly Norwich abandoning what really has been one of the key planks since Farker arrived. But by the same token, and we saw it in that first 2017-18 season, Farker had to go a bit more pragmatic. It couldn't just be cultured midfield options. You know, that watershed game against Millwall always stands out, where Alex Tete actually was the one who benefited most and came back in and added a bit more bite to what they were trying to achieve in central midfield. And I think, while Billy Gilmore is probably renowned for what he can do on the ball, by all accounts, he's not averse to putting his foot in, and he's good at the pressing game as well, which under Tuchel, you know, he demands that from his players, doesn't he? So I think it just signifies maybe on more a broader level, Norwich are trying to be a bit more flexible, a bit cuter, a little bit trying to keep teams off balance, not knowing quite clearly how Norwich want to go about the task from week to week, but, you know, maybe a signal that, you know, it's going to be less easy to pigeonhole. Because I'm pretty sure 2 seasons ago, Premier League opponents knew what Daniel Farker's team were all about, what they were trying to do. Not one-dimensional, that's probably not the right way to put it, but it was very much a lot of the eggs were in the same basket. Whereas now, I think you look at Rashica, he's another one. He's a different dimension, a different type of player to Emi Buendia. So that straight away tells me they're going to try and be a little bit different in the final third. And I think when you bring in a Billy Gilmore and they'll try and do another centre mid as well, that again, it's going to be different to how it was two seasons ago, where essentially he started with Tribal and Leitner. And while they were on the ball, the Newcastle game stood out, the home game, very good. But I remember watching them at West Ham away, and it was painful. The way West Ham just powered through them and highlighted their lack of defensive screening ability. And there's no way Norwich can be that one-dimensional again this time around. And I'm pretty sure Farker knows that, as does Weber. And that's why a Gilmore signing for me is allowing them to be a bit more multifaceted in their approach, as is Rashica. So, and I think all the business that they will do from now to the end of the window will be with that in mind, that they have to be far more nuanced in their approach compared to two seasons ago in the Premier League.
I think this sign-in, and again, you referenced it earlier in terms of how I kind of getting the impression that maybe Norwich are going to look to be a bit more counter-attacking, however you want to label it. For me, this is a really interesting one because of two elements. You spoke about his quality on the ball. He's a player who is really good in tight spaces, someone who is really good when there's lots of pressure on and needs to play through perhaps either a high press, or if Norwich have won the ball and they're essentially deep in their own half and are keen to progress it, then I think he's a fairly good option for that. And then equally, in that game at Wembley, what he did very well off the ball was didn't necessarily put his foot in and make loads of challenges, but he just slowed England's attacking options down when they had the ball and were running towards goal. And that just allowed Scotland to set their defensive shape. So interesting in that regard. But I think people will look at this pad and go, is he an Oliver Skip type? Is he an Oliver Skip replacement? Yeah. Certainly from what we've seen, from what we've heard, from sort of all the quotes about him, it seems that he is more sort of, I guess, sort of targeted the role that Kenny McLean plays, or maybe a completely different role that maybe Norwich don't have at the moment. Do you think that's fair, rather than perhaps someone who's going to come in and kind of take that Ollie Skip screening role? I think that's probably a fair assumption.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's definitely not a clone of Ollie Skip. Ollie Skip was, well, he was brilliant at championship level at putting fires out, anticipating when Norwich were in danger of getting countered and turned over. His athleticism in one-on-one situations in 5-10-yard pockets was, I've not really seen that in a Norwich shirt for many a season, maybe Tete when he first came in sort of thing. Just his ability to read the game and then his athleticism to actually, you know, whether it was just nicking a ball in front of a player or players trying to turn him and he's just perfectly timed his tackle and then he's given the ball. I think that's probably the difference for me. I don't see him in terms of his ability on the ball as quite as polished as a Gilmore. And again, referencing that how young this player is, that it's, you know, we need to always remember that he's literally a baby at this level, and that for all the talent, he hasn't really had a huge amount of exposure in the Premier League. So to basically drop him in now and say he will play 38 games for Norwich and he will dictate Premier League games week in, week out, I think is very unrealistic. So, you know, you must insert that caveat. But I do think on the ball, he will offer far more than Ollie Skip. I think we're maybe without the ball, well, let's see. But as I say, I mean, from the bits and pieces I've seen, he's maybe it's that Scottish background. He's quite happy to put his foot in and you know, try and press and try and close players down. But I wouldn't say that's his strongest suit as opposed to maybe with Ollie Skip. So for me, no, it's definitely not a like for like in that regard. Because they still, in an ideal world, they'd like to bring Ollie Skip in. So, you know, could you play them two together? Be a hell of an exciting young British-based midfield. I'm not sure about maybe the experience factor for me would be a slight concern. But in terms of what they could give in the right setting, that'd be a very mouth-watering prospect.
Yeah, it certainly would. I mean, he's a Daniel Farker player, isn't he, in terms of the way he likes to play technically, likes to dictate tempos of games, likes to get on the ball. We mentioned kind of playing in tight areas. Everything you kind of expect of a Daniel Farker midfielder sort of on the ball, he has. It's going to be interesting to see actually his off-the-ball elements and how strong they can be in a side that maybe in certain games won't dominate possession, and whether he kind of loses his way in those games or whether he's capable of imposing himself on them. That's going to be fascinating for me. In terms of the central midfield debate, if we sort of zoom out and broaden it out, one name that Norwich have been linked to quite persistently really throughout this window, I think it was the Daily Mirror that reported it first, is Bournemouth midfielder Philip Billing, who would offer that size and physique and power and energy, I suppose, that maybe Gilmore doesn't have. And when Stuart Webber talked about physicality and the need to bring in physicality, that wasn't necessarily, I think, as we've spoken about on here, size and physique. It was more different sorts of physicality. So how good someone is at consistently sprinting or other elements of physique beyond just pure height and power. Billing would be sort of physique in the traditional sense. Is he someone that, because I mean, we've spoken about Gilmore's size, is what, 5'6", very technically based?
No. I was told a little anecdote at his medical. he said to the doctor whoever the Norwich person was who was performing it, that he was 5'7" and a bit. And the doctor said straight away, yeah, when you're 5'7", that bit is quite important, isn't it? So yeah, not 5'6", Connor. 5'7" and a bit, that's from the man himself.
5'7" in a bit then. But when you've got someone who maybe doesn't have the physique in terms of pure power and maybe has that possibility of getting rolled by bigger midfielders, particularly in the Premier League, is someone like Philip Billing, not necessarily him, but someone in that mould, sort of pivotal to balancing off Norwich City's midfield to make sure they don't get kind of physically outdone, which was the case on a lot of occasions last time in the Premier League?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that even at a Premier League level, set pieces, which was something Norwich were found wanting quite regularly, particularly that Project Restart period towards the end of the previous Premier League season. You know, I remember the Everton game, Car Road, where Michael Keane near post, and there was one or two instances like that. So in terms of the physicality of a Billing, we'll say, type player, it's not only what they offer in terms of the midfield craft, but it is, you know, defending set pieces, very important part of the game. You know, the quality that Premier League players have to deliver balls into your box, you know, it's a facet of the game you can't overlook. And Gilmore, with the greatest respect, will give a lot of things to Norwich, but he's not really going to help you out defending set pieces. So Billing is definitely the one they like. So just saw the question pop through there. He's one they like to do, absolutely. Stuart Webber, a huge fan from their time at Huddersfield. I think Farker likes him as well. I think Farker would see him as a project. Maybe in a little bit in the same way that, you know, they saw raw material in a Ben Godfrey and converted him to a centre-back as it was. I'm not saying convert Billing, but in terms of the physical attributes are there, the technical attributes are there, that power, that athleticism. But for me, I look at him and, you know, he hasn't really, you know, stamped his authority at Huddersfield. He went on to Bournemouth. It's not really happened for him there. So, you know, I just think there is a player there, but whether he's oven ready for what Norwich need in the Premier League next season, because that type of player you would again want to be able of dominating games at that level. And I don't think he's necessarily shown us that in his career, but he does fit the profile and he's definitely one they like. But as always, and I think Scott Parker has gone into Bournemouth now, hasn't he? It was confirmed the last couple of days. So that, I'm sure, is a huge factor in the viability of could they get him out of Bournemouth. What will Scott Parker want to do now? What does he think of the boy Billing? You know, does he want to give the existing squad a chance, or is he more of the, we need to turn things around here and have a bit of churn? And if so, and there's an opportunity to bring that lad in, he's definitely one they would like to do, no doubt about it. But again, it'll probably come down to the finances as well.
Yeah, and you look at the midfield they're assembling, they've got a lot of different options now, which I guess is what you were alluding to in terms of preparing themselves perhaps in a little bit of a better way than they did last time, where, as you referenced, they started with Tribal and Leitner and then eventually kind of worked their way to McLean and Tetti, and it was essentially two very defensive midfielders because their defence wasn't good enough, to be frank. So it is interesting now the type of midfielders that they're bringing in, and that is the one, isn't it? The big kind of physical, almost muscular central midfielder that they're missing, that can impose themselves on games physically rather than technically, I suppose. And whether Ollie Skip, combative, isn't he? But not in terms of physicality. He's not particularly tall or imposing, I suppose, in stature. That does seem like the box that needs filling now. And I guess Billing is the one that sort of fits those boxes of the links that we've heard so far. Of course, one could pop up from nowhere as they very often do. Just to round off the midfield debate then, Pad, we had a link, and I can't believe this was this week. It feels like last week, which goes to show what sort of week this has been. Thomas Delaney, linked from Borussia Dortmund by Sky Sports Germany, I think it was, wasn't it, early part of the week. It was Norwich, Palace and Southampton, I think, were the three clubs, which immediately, I think, when you see a report like that, suggests an agent potentially putting a name out there or something that maybe doesn't quite click. But this was one that turned out Norwich aren't in for Thomas Delaney, which I think a lot of people could have predicted. There was a lot of debate around his age and whether Norwich City would sign someone of his age, 29 at the moment. The fee or reported fee was £13 million. And there was a lot of debate, particularly on Twitter that I saw, about resale value and Norwich City signing players that need to have that. You wrote a good piece on this. I'm not asking you to kind of read it out, but it just kind of summarise your thoughts on that link. And whilst, although that one isn't true, it doesn't mean that Norwich City aren't going to sign, let's say, a 29-year-old in the future.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, the gist of that was, having seen that debate, and it's a very valid debate, because how does, if you think that the Norwich model and the Weber and Farker is essentially a Maddison, a Godfrey, Jamal Lewis, to develop players, young, talented players, develop them. We're talking about, you know, Farker getting hold of Billing and what he could do with him, but he's shown it already with those type of players. And then you sell them on for huge markups from what you originally brought him in, Andy Buendia as well, throw him in into the mix. But I don't think that is necessarily 100% black and white. That's how Norwich operate in the transfer window, because, you know, there's counter arguments to that. And most recently, in the last 24 hours or so, Ben Gibson confirmed, you know, he's a 28-year-old defender, £8 million. It's a sizable outlay for Norwich. Signs a 3 or 4 year deal, was it? I mean, you wouldn't say he has huge amounts of resale value at that level. So, you know, I think I couldn't see Delaney at 13 million, but could I see a 28, 29-year-old around their transfer record? I think I probably could, actually, yeah, because, you know, they need probably in certain parts of the team to have that more finished product rather than a, you know, a project or a work in progress, which, of course, you know, Gilmore certainly is, albeit only on loan. Rashid said there's a huge unknown about him. You know, he's still fairly a young man, you know, he's only his mid-20s, but coming from the Bundesliga now, a Delaney type of player, what does he offer you? Well, he's been playing in the Champions League for a top-ranked club only in the past season, and he's now part of a Danish team. We've got to quarters of the Euros, he's played every game, started every game. You know, he is a serious seasoned operator who I think, even though he hasn't played in the Premier League, you'd be reasonably confident with his backstory you could bring him into the Premier League and he'd be able to adapt fairly quickly. So I don't see Delaney necessarily, but I wouldn't rule out a sizable transfer for an older player, because, you know, ultimately Norwich now are in the part of the cycle where it's about not coming straight back down again to then try again. You know, that's going to be increasingly difficult to do that. They're all about, and you see a signing of Gilmore's, you know, calibre, they're all about trying to stay up this season and then push on from there. So, you know, if you need a little bit of, you know, finished article, then I wouldn't necessarily rule it out. But yeah, just to reiterate, nothing in Delaney. I read that to be, he's got apparently 12 months left on his Dortmund deal. Are the people around about him, you know, thinking A, we want to pressure Dortmund into something contractually, or B, is it a fancy a nice payday in the Premier League? And then if it is, then you're looking down a list of Premier League clubs and who might need a defensive midfielder. Lo and behold, out pops Norwich, and there's your link. So, you know, that's probably more coming from those angles rather than, you know, Norwich have shown any concerted interest. But of course, you know, they're in the market for central midfielders. They'll be scouring the net far and wide. I'm sure he would be on a list of, you know, recruitment sort of led analysis. So, you know, it's, you know, if they're going to bring in lads from Chelsea, then we can't ever strike a line through these definitively. But I'd think at 13 million, that's, for me, doing what he's doing at Euros, there'll be other clubs who now maybe see him and see how influential he is for Denmark and think 12 months left, yeah, he could probably do a job for us. So I could see him probably looking slightly higher than, you know, a newly promoted club in the Premier League. So, but it's an interesting one. And, you know, what we do know for definite is, whether it's irrespective, partly Ollie Skip, they want to do a central midfielder, and they're willing, as Stuart Webber said at the start of the summer, to set a new transfer record to either do that or do a centre-back. You know, the well-worn stories we had around Christopher Ayer, you know, the Celtic, Norwegian international. It's going to take club record fees, I think, now to bring in the type of additions they want to improve this squad.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just round off the kind of midfield chat by speaking about Ollie Skip, because Paul on Facebook has said anything in the Skip rumour starting again. And obviously this has I suppose, moved on to an extent, but not really, purely in the fact that Spurs now have a head coach, which is something that they haven't had for the rest of the summer. And who was at Wolves, of course. I think he, off the top of my head, gifted 14 players at Wolves under the age of 22. Their sort of senior debuts. So is clearly a manager who is open to giving youth an opportunity. We heard in his first interview as Spurs boss, him speaking about the quality in the academy and it being part of his brief to utilise that if necessary, although central midfield is quite a bloated part of Spurs' squad. So it just feels still at the moment that Skip's immediate future hinges on a few things. Initially, what Nuno thinks of him, and of course he's injured at the moment. That's something that Norwich are kind of hoping will work in their favour as we get towards the back end of the window. It sounds like Harry Winks' future as well is going to be fairly important to dictating whether Ollie Skip stays at Spurs next season or not, because if Winks is there, then that probably does block his route. And if you're Ollie Skip, are you going to want to stay at Spurs after a season of having played consistently, being on the bench or playing in sort of, what is it, the European Conference League or whatever. I'm not even sure if they're in that. So it's a difficult one from that regard. In terms of what this Billy Gilmour move does, that is one of Norwich City's two Premier League loan spots that they've now activated. So it's fair to say if we see another Premier League loan arrive, then that means that Ollie Skip is not possible. And if we don't, then it means that there is still hope in terms of that. Any sort of updates in terms of Ollie Skip, Pad? I mean, it's been a difficult one because there's been so much uncertainty around Spurs.
Absolutely, yeah. It's hard to second guess where Nuno would see him fitting in there. I think personally he'd probably go back to Wolves and try and get Ruben Neves or something like that, or Moutinho. Yeah, yeah. He'd still do your job, wouldn't he? So, and I think the big factor here is that he is, as we sit here today, injured and will be for the majority of pre-season, you know, if not right up until the start of the season. I think 12 weeks off the top of my head was the original timeline for the broken foot. So Nuno's not going to be able to run the rule over him. That's the fundamentals of it. You know, you're going to get into the Premier League season, then you're going to get pretty close to the window closing. And will he have seen enough of Ollie Skip to make a definitive decision that this guy right here, right now, can be part of it this coming season? So, while it was horrendous news for the lad at the time when he did what he did, I think it might really be Norwich's trump card, because if Nuno arrives at the conclusion, well, I just can't make a decision on him because I won't be able to see him enough, then Ollie Skip won't want to kick his heels, as you rightly say, in the shadows between now and January. So I think it's safe to say if he's not featuring, he will be going on loan, and then it's just where he goes. And, you know, we were talking about this before we came onto the broadcast. I'm pretty sure there'll be other interested Premier League clubs looking at him, mid to lower ranking Premier League clubs, because of what he did. We talked at the outset about how influential he was for Norwich in the Championship. He really was one of the cornerstones of what they went on to achieve last season. No two ways about it. Maybe not in the same headline-grabbing way as Emi Buendia or Timu Pukki, even the central defenders and what the back four did. But you take him out of that last season and it's a different outcome for me. He was that influential. So clubs in the Premier League will have seen that. He's got the pedigree because, you know, you're not at Tottenham and coming through there if you haven't got something about you. So I think it's safe to assume Ollie Skip will, one of two things will happen. He'll either get a chance in Tottenham's plans under Nuno, a genuine chance to stake a claim, or they'll be loaning him out. And if they loan him out, you'd like to think, and we talked again about this just off air, you know, Ollie Skip today has a look at that and sees Billy Gilmour going to Norwich. I like the sound of that. I like what the set signal that sends. They're obviously trying to have a good go at it. Maybe I fancy being a part of that game, because the thing with him is you're not pushing against the closed door. He knows how Daniel Farker works. He knows the setup, how Stuart Webber works. He knows what it's all about. There's a lot of ticks in that box in terms of him. If he's been told at Tottenham it's not going to happen for you this season, where he goes next, there's a huge amount of draw factors back to Norfolk, rather than, you know, I don't know, hypothetically, we'll say a Southampton, for example, wanted to take him. He doesn't really know, you know, the ins and outs of how it operates, you know, what their manager is going to demand of him over there, the playing squad, the style, the whole thing that goes with moving to a different club. All of that is a given at Norwich. So there's a huge amount of plus points to why Norwich might be at the head of a potential loan queue. But, you know, ultimately, for the reasons already stated, with Nuno not maybe being able to sort of count on him until the start of the season, it'll be the same with Norwich, hence why Gilmour's in the building. They'll look to do another centre mid, and if on top they can get in Ollie Skip, then all well and good. I mean, as Stuart Webber said when we went and spoke to him at the end of the season, I think the quote was along the lines of, if we have to wait for the final hour of the final day of the window for Ollie Skip and we get him, we'll wait. So to take your point, if we don't see another loan in the Premier League between now and, you know, the start of the season, then safe to assume they're probably holding the door open for Ollie Skip. If they do another loan signing, then the decision's probably already been made, I think.
Yeah, and I think as well, there seems to be a, I don't want to say a perception because it might be wrong, but I think it's this idea that there's either two solutions for him. He either stays at Spurs or he goes on loan to Norwich. I'm not sure it's as crystal clear as that. I think you mentioned other clubs being interested. I just wonder if there was one that maybe popped up that perhaps didn't have the kind of threat of relegation or that kind of battling against survival, the drop, so to speak. If you mentioned Southampton, we could chuck Wolves in there. I think you could reference several Premier League teams that if that popped up, then maybe he would see that as a step up to where Norwich are now. So that's another interesting element. I'm not sure it's as clear cut as well. Spurs don't want him, so he'll end up at Norwich. I think it could be that Norwich, like they have with Billy Gilmore, have to fight with several other interested parties for Ollie Skip. So it's going to be...
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Really interesting to see what happens with that. We'll get on to a few of your questions and then we'll go on to some of the kind of outgoings that we've seen this week.
Have you got your hanky at the ready for Marco, mate, when we get to
just,
that?
Just about, I think, just about, yeah. We'll start with this question on YouTube. Someone has said, heard Reece Nelson is available and three English clubs are interested. Are we one of those three? It's certainly not a name that I've heard linked with Norwich, Pad.
No, I think Tavernier was the one I saw in terms of right back. He sort of can operate down the right, can't he? Right hand side.
I think he's a bit of jack of all trades, isn't he, Reece Nelson? Yeah. He can kind of play everywhere. Wasn't he one of the players that was linked in the Arsenal swap deal for Buendia?
January, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was him. Was it Willick as well? I think might have been thrown in the mix. I think his salary demands probably would take that out of the equation before you even get to the footballing demands, but. No, I wouldn't see that. I wouldn't say that. And I don't think there's too much in the Tavernier one as well. The lad who was, he's at Rangers, isn't he? I think he's their captain, isn't he? He was touted as well, but in the last sort of 24, 48 hours, but I don't think there's anything in that. And obviously, we had the line last week, was it? I think strike a line through Bogle at Sheffield United now, the former Derby right back. And this debate is obviously all sort of interlinked with, is Max Aarons staying? Is Max Aarons going? And one thing we didn't mention, or I've mentioned, I keep banging this hypothetical drum, you know, don't rule out an Ollie Skip, Max Aarons, a few extra quid on the table kind of vibe as well. I mean, again, it makes me laugh when I see Tottenham have revived their interest in Max Aarons. When I see those reports, take revived that. The interest has been there for quite a number of transfer windows now. And it's irrespective of who the coach is, because a bit like the same model Norwich have got, it's somebody else pulling the strings in terms of recruitment. I know another new lad's gone in there. Paratici has gone in there this week into Tottenham as their sporting director. So, but I don't think there's any renewal of it. I think the interest is there. If they're looking to make a change in terms of their right backs, Max Aarons would be pretty high up their list, I would have thought. So is that a factor in the whole Ollie Skip conundrum? Who knows? But Reece Nelson, don't see it, mate.
Yeah, it's interesting with Spurs, isn't it? Because Steve Hitchin is the one that Stuart Webber has a fairly close relationship with. The lad that you mentioned there is coming as sporting director. It's going to be interesting to see where Hitchin quite fits into that, because I think he had, not sure of his official title, but he had a fairly senior position. So if he now perhaps doesn't have the sway that he once did over transfers, ins and outs, then maybe that will shift what Norwich City can do in terms of Spurs and their relationship with Spurs as well. Jake Tidy on YouTube has said, do you expect Norwich to make any signings within the next 2 to 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, we're talking again about this off-air that, you know, our understanding was that Aya, the centre-back, the Celtic player, the Norwegian international, that was a long, long way down the track. Won't put a figure on it, but it wouldn't have taken too many more obstacles to clear for that deal to have got put together. Now, you know, reading between the lines, it looks like Celtic are digging their heels in a little bit. There was reports in the German media, because Leverkusen were linked to him, that Celtic are demanding a figure that they're not willing to pay, and and certainly Stuart Webber isn't a man who's going to get bullied in the transfer market, that is for sure. So, you know, could you deduce from that that maybe Ayer would be open to maybe a Premier League opportunity? But clearly, you know, you need to reach an agreement with his club as well. So, you know, he's only got 12 months, I think, contractually left. You can understand Celtic want to drive a hard bargain. They've made a centre-back signing this week. I've seen them linked with another Croatian under-21 international for $3 million. Are they getting their players in before they then sanction an Ayer departure? So that's a long-winded way of saying, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. If the Ayer deal, a lot of the I's and T's were crossed and dotted, then you could probably revive that if there was any encouragement from the Celtic end. So I think something of that nature could happen. But certainly right now, I think it's been quite a flood of ins, outs, shake it all about. So this week, I don't see anything imminently. But, you know, never say never with Norwich, the way they operate and the way they move. And for Ayer, you can read a lot of these. You know, a lot of these things have many moving parts, and it doesn't take a huge amount for things to fall into place very quickly. You know, Villa and Buendia, that moved very swiftly after endless sort of Arsenal this and bit of Villa that, and then more Arsenal this. You know, the actual nuts and bolts of that deal got put together at pretty breakneck speed. So, you know, it can happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But I think most Norwich fans, I get the sense now that they're very happy now where at this stage of the summer where they are in terms of, you know, the business they've done. You know, it is essentially 5 senior signings if you include Yiannoulis and Gibson, along with Rashica, Gunn, and now Gilmore. That's a pretty healthy comparative. I haven't looked this morning, but I bet if you looked at the other 19 Premier League clubs, there's probably not too many who've done 5 deals already. So, you know, you put Norwich in the front rank of those who've actually started to move things along. And now maybe there will be a little bit of a pause. Players are back, obviously, next week, the non-Euro contingent. So maybe the focus will switch back to there for a week or two. But you can be sure that, you know, plenty of work is still going on because ultimately they still know there's 1 or 2 areas of the squad that they need to address.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention about the players returning from pre-season. I think inevitably you see a little bit of a pause, don't you, in terms of not just Norwich City's transfer business more widely, as teams kind of assess which players perhaps have come back looking fairly sharp and those that haven't, and kind of fine-tuning their plans a little bit. Ben on YouTube has said, will Sam McCallum be staying in the building as secondary sort of left-back cover?
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, again, I think we were told something like 7 or 8 clubs had already inquired for him, predominantly at Championship level, within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the end of the season. He clearly did do a very, very impressive season at Coventry on loan. You know, his former club, that's who Norwich got from originally. I think at the start of that loan spell, there was a little bit, he was getting used sort of the opposite flank and used in a wing-back role. But I think as the season progressed for Cov, he established himself on that left-hand side, wing-back or in a back four. And really was, you know, quite a solid operator in a team who achieved their objective of staying in the Championship, but obviously just about stayed up. I think they finished sort of lower mid table. I think now if you're Norwich and you're Neil Adams, you're probably thinking, well, the gap from there to being given Yiannoulis is the first choice, probably just, you know, sitting on the bench in a Premier League level, not really going to aid his development. So maybe now it'll be about, I would imagine, pitching him mid to higher end of the Championship, get him another season there, get him another season of regular football. And then who knows, you know, 12 months on. I mean, he was originally sent out because they were a bit concerned, not about his attacking play as a fullback, but maybe the defensive side of his game. By all accounts, you know, he's come on in that area last season at Coventry. Another season of development at mid to higher level Championship end. And depending on where Norwich find themselves in 12 months, then he could come back and he might be a lot closer to the first 11 than he is currently. But no, I don't see it. I think Byram is in that, you know, scenario, isn't he, in terms of, you know, if he's fit. He showed 2 seasons ago before he got injured, he was keeping Jamal out of the side at left back. So he could clearly do a job if he gets back to that level. And if so, irrespective of what happens on the right-hand side of the defence with Max, I think they'd probably go Yiannoulis and they'd go Sam Byram. And of course, the Danish Lizarazu, you know, Jakob Sorensen, he could do you a job. I don't know if he could do a job in the Premier League against some of the wide players he'd come up against, but he certainly didn't let anybody down at Championship level. So, you know, in an emergency, who knows? But hopefully, you know, Yiannoulis will be the man.
Yeah, given how green he looked against this Mela Sarr, I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I think McCallum was playing as a wing back last year, wasn't he, for Coventry? So I think ideally you'd probably want to see him in a flat back four, like you said, a team with no disrespect to Coventry that's maybe a bit more upwardly mobile and having.
Hold on. We'll have none of that.
and a bit more likelihood of perhaps playoff contention. But who knows? Mark Robbins has done a fine job there. The Marvellous X on Periscope has said, you stated that we wouldn't be in for a striker. Has the view changed with Soto's departure? Let's park that question for a moment, Pab. We'll come back to that. Let's speak to about Soto now, though. We kind of understand that. We saw those links with Porto's sort of B team, however you want to sort of dress it up. That looks like a goer. It looks like it's something that's going to happen, a loan to buy, as we understand it. Talk to us a little bit about why you think that decision has been made, because he was only brought in 12 months ago on a free from Hanover. We've seen him go on loan to Telstar. There was then a real clamour to get that work permit and for him to return in January, but he came back and didn't really feature for the under-23s. So talk to us a little bit about why you feel they've reached this decision now that maybe is the time to send him out on loan. And I guess the option of a future fee suggests that maybe they don't see a pathway or a plan that ends with him being a first-team regular at Norwich.
That's it in a nutshell, Connor. The buy option in that proposed deal, the decision is made. If you're Daniel Farker, Stuart Webber, they have arrived at the conclusion that Sebastian Soto isn't what they're looking for in terms of, you know, the mid to longer term. They're amassing a huge amount of strikers in that development pool, aren't they? You know, it feels like every window they go out and bring new talent in, and some of that gets recycled and heads off again. I'm thinking the Tristan Abrahams and those type of players. It is a surprising one. And then when you see, okay, it might be initially Porto's B team, but the fact that it is a team who, one of the European heavyweights, you know, finished second again in the Portuguese top flight, they're in the Champions League group stages for this coming season, and they're willing to, you know, take him on loan with a view to buy. So from Porto's angle, they seem to have seen something in him of the potential variety. But I don't know, you know, it comes down to opinions, doesn't it? And what Daniel particularly wants from his strikers, and, you know, maybe they've looked at him at close quarters, because that's what Daniel said all along when he was scoring the goals he was for Telstar in the second tier in Holland. Daniel was very quick to dampen down. And then, of course, he got his US call up and he scored for the US on his first senior appearance. Whenever you spoke to Daniel second half of last season, he was very quick to dampen down the expectations about this guy. So, you know, in Daniel's mind, is he not quite what he would view the archetypal sort of Daniel Farker type striker? You obviously put him up against the Teemu Pukki. I don't think he's that type of player in terms of his craft. What he looks to be is an excellent finisher. You know, if he gets a chance, that goal he scored for Telstar, of comparatives with Van Basten, the back post volley, you know, that's a high tariff strike, that. So there is something there, but maybe not enough for Daniel right here, right now, to bring him in. I mean, obviously, Adam Eder, to sort of maybe stitch that previous question about, are they still in for a striker? Not that they brought Rashica in. I don't think they will look to bring in an out-and-out striker. You could argue post sort of Stieperman leaving and Buendia leaving now, do they need somebody in the two or three positions behind the main striker? But in terms of the main striker position, no, it's Teemu when he's fit will play. And if not, it's probably going to be Adam Eder will be the next cab off the rank. And if you're Daniel Farker and Adam Eder is seen as the best of the young crop, then Sebastian Soto, with the greatest will in the world, isn't going to get an opportunity in the next season or two. And if that's the case, then, and you get this, could potentially be €1 million is the figure reported, then for a player you got on a free transfer, in the pure financial sense, that's an excellent bit of business. And I'm sure there'll be attendant clauses and sell-ons so that if he really catches in Portuguese football and really blossoms and goes on to bigger and better things, you know, there'll be a kickback for Norwich in terms of the sell-on fee. But financially, you'd probably say that's another astute piece of business that they've found a lad who was, you know, coming to the end at Hanover, got him on a free transfer, turned him around, pushed him out the door again, and potentially going to get €1 million for him. But it does strike you as, you know, a very, very definitive decision quite early in that man's Norwich career, you know, if they've decided he's not for them. But, you know, they will have seen him day in, day out, second part of last season at close quarters. And, you know, I'm sure that decision has been reached for the good of what Daniel Farker's trying to do this season. But Yeah, when you see Porto linked, you do does raise an eyebrow, doesn't it? And you know, I saw one or two tweets immediately from Norwich fans. Well, if he's good enough for Porto, what, how on earth is he not good enough for Norwich? But I think it is worth reiterating that initially he is seen as part of their B team rather than, you know, going straight into Conte Sal, I think, is the head coach there, into his Champions League sort of pool. I don't think he's quite at that level yet. So if it happens, then good luck to the lad. And I'll certainly be watching his career closely from here, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting what you said there about the financials as well. That will be a part of it. Some of these players that Norwich City do sign who are relatively young, they're not always with the intention of being first team regulars at Norwich. It's a case of maybe getting some quick profit out of them on occasion, or getting them to a level where they can get them a career elsewhere. Soto is maybe someone who left on a free that they felt they could get some value in relatively quickly across a year, as you mapped out there. That's clearly something they've done. If this goes through with a 1 million euro sort of clause, then that they have made sort of £1 million profit on a player who's never played a first team game for the club, which is relatively good going. And then equally, the Ida stuff is interesting as well, because Soto, I was just having a look there, actually turns 21 at the end of this month. Adam Ida is still only 20. There's about 6 months between them, and Adam Ida is essentially Norwich City's second choice striker at the moment, isn't he? So if you're looking in terms of age profiles at the moment, certainly in terms of Norwich City, Adam Ida is significantly ahead of Sebastian Soto. And maybe that's why this decision has been reached as well, because Norwich kind of have their young striker who's knocking on the door, and Daniel Farke's clearly assessed it and clearly feels that Ida is a lot closer than Soto is. So, yeah, that's it. As you said, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on at Porto once that one's all confirmed. But a little bit more work to do as of yet. Let's answer the second part of that question, which you kind of did from the Marvellous X about Norwich City strikers and maybe why they're not going for a striker. The name that was linked, when was it? Middle of last month, Adam Armstrong. We've heard that. I think we said on last week's show that is one now that we believe is looking increasingly unlikely. Both the financial elements and also perhaps other Premier League teams that are in for him mean that that's not going to be possible for Norwich. And we kind of mapped out what it would take in terms of perhaps different things aligning and the fee significantly dropping and stuff like that. So, as Pad mapped out there, I think there's probably a bit more of a debate, as you said, about the attacking positions, because suddenly with Stiepermann gone, Buendia gone, we've seen a few players leaving those attacking positions. Josh Martin as well, another one who we'll come on to in a second. That leaves a little bit of space in those kind of free positions behind the striker, doesn't it? Now you've got essentially Todd Cantwell, Onel Hernandez, Milo Rashica, Kieran Dowell, essentially, unless I'm missing anyone, which is Poeta, of course, yeah. But then even his future is undecided, isn't it? So do you think we'll see Norwich once they have sorted their priorities? And I think it's interesting in terms of this talk about a striker. It's not they don't want to sign a striker. I think it's more they're prioritising other positions. And we kind of mentioned the central defensive options, the central midfield options. If an opportunity came up for a striker that was too good to turn down, then they'd do it, wouldn't they? But ultimately, that doesn't look likely. Strikers are expensive as well. That will undoubtedly be a part of it. But do you see them bringing in perhaps a few options for those sort of players behind Teemu Pukki, behind Adam Ida, in those kind of attacking midfield positions before the end of the window?
Well, it's a really interesting one, because you would think they probably do need to do that. But then, you know, if the priority, as it seems to be, is centre-back, centre-mid, that might be another 20 million gone, you know, realistically, for the quality of player that they're trying to attract and the quality of player they're getting linked with. So, irrespective, again, part of the skip, you know, that could come off. If it does, fine. But if you spent another 20 million on top of what they've already outlaid so far this window, you're going to have to be very creative to then add at the top end of the pitch, as in just behind Teemu. And just to reiterate on Teemu, and I'm seeing a few comments about he's not maybe good enough for this level still, but there's only one man's opinion that counts, really, and that's Daniel Farke. And if he's fit, he will play for Daniel Farke in the Premier League week in and week out. And they'll only play one striker, I would imagine. He's not suddenly going to revise and go two up top. That's not going to happen. Maybe in the odd game, if the game dictates, but it'll be one up top. It'll be Teemu Pukki until he's no longer fit enough, or maybe the form is really gone, as it did two seasons ago. But the three positions behind there, well, you know, you look at it, and if they lined up against Liverpool, we'll say hypothetically on the opening weekend with Rashica, Cantwell, Dowell, I don't think anybody would be too unhappy with that, would they? As your front three, and then
Is it more about depth, though, on that point?
Well,
what happens if Todd Cantwell does get injured? Well, then you're essentially asking players that didn't really play a great deal in the Championship to step into a Premier League environment.
Which is that is the point. But then again, that's where it would have been probably next cab off the rank would have been Marco Stieperman. And I don't think too many Norwich fans parking the emotion of what he did for them before when he left and the deserved sort of recognition he got. You wouldn't have been overly happy if Marco Stieperman was coming off the bench or starting games because of an injury or a suspension to the aforementioned trio. But so you would say purely in those terms, yes, they do need to do one. But let's be honest, if you're looking for a Milo Rashica level signing, you're talking another 9 or 10 million. Have Norwich got 9 or 10 million for that position of the pitch when they want to spend that probably on a centre back and a centre mid? Answer is probably not. Unless Max Aaron's departs, we'll say. And then if he departed, then it's a game changer. But obviously then you need to address the right back position. So, you know, pieces on a chessboard essentially is where we're at. And I think right here, right now, the priority is those two positions, centre back, centre mid. But of course, we're talking about, you know, they do have potentially one Premier League loan up their sleeve. Is there I dare to name the bloke because it went pear-shaped pretty quickly, but a Patrick Roberts type of plucked from a top-end Premier League club. We know how tight Farker is with Guardiola. Could you get one of... But then, of course, you know, you bring in a lad of that ilk for that club, there's probably going to have to be guarantees of how much game time they get rather than have him and it, you know, play him, don't play him. So it's a very difficult balancing act. But that would be one potential avenue if we get towards the end of the summer and they've got a Premier League loan option and it isn't going to be skipped. Could you maybe bolster your three behind Pukki in that area? Because I just don't see at this stage, if Aarons stays in the building, financially, how you could, the grade of player you'd need to improve what you've got there in that three behind, the money that would require, I just don't see it. So, because I think the priorities are elsewhere, given the finances they've got available. But it's a fair point, and you're right to ask it. I think fans are right to ask. If you go with Cantwell, Rashica and Dowell, all well and good, but the chances are at some point in the season, one or more of those aren't going to be available. Who steps up then? You know, it was proven 2 seasons ago. Kim McLean was tried there. Stieperman was tried there. Andre Duda. None of them really worked, did they? And as a result, Norwich at the top end of the pitch were pretty fitful at mid to second part of the Premier League season. It's an absolutely key area to pitch, particularly as a newly promoted side. You need to have a bit of guile and a bit of endeavour and a bit of cunning to unlock Premier League defences. And, you know, I can understand why there might be a little bit of concern if they were to go into the season and they haven't now added to that position, because you are asking a Puerta, we'll say, or a Hernandez to come in and do you a job there. And I don't think we'd be overly confident they could influence games at Premier League level.
Yeah, I guess the other option is Adam Eder, who we have seen him play in those wide positions before. Whether that's something that perhaps they feel they've got a little bit more cover there because of him playing. They played there against Rotherham, didn't they, away last season. And with his pace and power, you'd imagine he could cause some sort of damage down one of those sides. But as you said, equally, not sure if that's really a route you want to go down. But we'll see what happens. The key word is priorities, isn't it? And if Norwich do want to break their club record transfer fees on a central defender or a central midfielder, then that limits what you can do elsewhere without a major sale. These are the decisions that Stuart Webber and co are having to weigh up this summer. This is an interesting question from Peter, and then we'll get on to some of the outs, which kind of lends itself to what we've been speaking about, actually. He says, what are the odds that Norwich bring in a £20 million or more player in a loan with an obligation to buy contingent on survival? I mean, we saw this a little bit last season, Gibson and Yanulis, the perfect examples, players that perhaps in terms of fees and finance were out of the picture at the moment, but maybe in 12 months, if they did stay in the Premier League, would be more viable. Is that a route you can see them going down? I guess we're talking with players on the continent rather than Premier League players because of obviously what we've spoken about in terms of those two slots.
That's a really interesting question. I can see the construct being used again, loan with a view to buy. I'm not sure 20 million. I still think even with a survival season behind them and another tranche of Premier League broadcast income, I don't think they would be entertaining a £20 million deal even in 12 months. But you could see that. You could definitely see, because it's worked for them now with Yanulis, it's worked for them successfully with Gibson. I just think, if there's players out there who are sort of 20 million and above, then they're probably going to be fairly key operators in their current club. So unless there's been some sort of fallout or something's gone on. But again, you know, they've shown how astute they are in the recruitment stakes. And I'm sure that is something they would consider, but I wouldn't see it in the context of a 20 million obligation to buy. I think that's still a bit too rich for Norwich at this stage of the sort of development cycle under Weber and Farker.
Andre Didier was a £20 million player, wasn't he? I think that was the quote I remember 25. At the time.
25.
Sorry, I've underplayed him a little bit there.
Yeah, well, he did all right in the Euros, didn't he? I think it was one or two games he looked half decent, but I don't know. But it just underlines the sort of precarious nature of recruitment per se, but certainly recruitment from overseas as well, when you really don't know definitively if they will be out here, which is possibly a slight question mark with Rashica. He looks to have it all to be able to hit the ground running, but it might just take him a little while to adapt. You know, it's a different type of football. All the German lads who've come in, you know, to Norwich, they often talk about the quite different challenges between playing in the Bundesliga and playing in Championship Premier League. So, you know, we'll have to just, you know, maybe a bit like Gilmore, give him a little bit of time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move to the outs then. Let's start with Josh Martin. That's the one that was confirmed yesterday. Joined MK Dons on a season-long loan deal. We know how Norwich operate with loans now. Neil Adams has really revolutionised that department, hasn't he, in terms of what he's done and players being fitted to clubs rather than just sort of thrown into clubs. This will have been something that they will have looked at, and I'm sure Russell Martin and his Norwich City connections helped in this as well. We've seen a few players head there on loan. Someone with, as Russell Martin has said since it was announced, someone who had Championship interest, someone who looked in patches relatively promising for Norwich in the Championship. I remember the game we went to at Stoke when there was in the build-up to one of the goals, some really nice skill on the left-hand side from him. We obviously saw the goal against Sheffield Wednesday. Very technical player, sometimes drifted out of games a little bit, I think that's fair to say. This looks on paper like a good fit for all parties, doesn't it?
Yes, what on? Yeah, I mean, he's got ability. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I'll go back to this time last year out in Germany, and as much as you place any store by pre-season, he was as good as any player out there. And Daniel Farker was seemingly quite keen to involve him. And of course, he played because of the first Luton League Cup tie, which fell in the international window, and he got his opportunity there. And then he played a few more times, but funny enough, when they went back to Luton later on that season in the league, and they got beat that night, Michael McGovern was in goal. That was kind of in the midst of some serious injury issues. He played that night again, and he looked a bit off the pace, as they all did. It was a pretty poor team performance, but I don't know whether that was because he didn't really feature too much thereafter. In the second part of the season, he was kind of towards the end, at least. He was back with the development pool. So I think maybe the decision was made that at this stage of his career, he needs to be out playing games at a bit of a lower level to where Norwich are currently going to be operating. And for me, MK Dons is an absolutely perfect environment. You know, Russ is heavily reliant or heavily committed to a possession style of football. Good technical players he must have there at League One level. And this guy, I think, could rip it up there. And if he does, talking about McCallum a little bit earlier, if he had a really, really outstanding season at League One level, then you would feel he might, you know, and it's pertinent because we're talking there at length about options behind Pukki, not for this season, but maybe seasons to come. You know, if Josh Martin really blossoms at MK Dons, we saw what it did for Ben Godfrey. We only have to go back to, you know, his season at Shrewsbury, came back, albeit he was playing in defensive midfield, but he came back and got his opportunity and has never looked back. So I'm sure they'll be hoping. And at 19, he's still a very young man. You know, he was well ahead of the curve getting anywhere near Norwich's first team, I think. Which shows you the rate of progress and what also shows you what Farker thought of him, you know, because as Daniel always says, there'll be no gifts with young players. They get taken to the door. Can they walk through it? Gave him his debut in that Premier League project restart period. And then, as I say, start of last season, I think if he'd have really put down a marker, he would have had a lot more exposure. And we might have been talking about him in terms of he's one of Norwich's brightest young players. But as with young players, you talked about it there, Connor, you know, consistency is the elusive commodity. That's why Ollie Skip was so impressive, what he did last season, albeit a year or two older. But there's a player there, no doubt about it. And you just hope under Russ's guidance, with the style of football he's trying to impart there at MK, that, you know, he really blossoms and comes back. But broadly speaking, that is the model, isn't it? Yeah, we've seen it. Reece McAleer's already gone out this summer. There'll be, funny enough, there's another one due to go out later today. One of the young keepers will be going out on loan. And it's one of the planks of what Neil Adams is nominally the person in charge of, which is picking the right moments at the right points in these young players' careers to give them the exposure they need so that they either come back as we just discussed with Soto, come back and they're not really going to feature for Norwich, but you can move them on and maybe make some money. Or they are actually, like a Godfrey, for example, he's a prime example. They come back and they're ready to feature in Norwich's first team. So that's the game, and it's a balancing act. And right here, right now, for Josh Martin, they've decided the best port of call for him is go and play a season in League One. And another one who I think Norwich fans will be hoping he goes and does very well and comes back a lot closer to Norwich's first team.
Yeah, and who's just joined the coaching staff at MK Dons? Matt Gill, strategic and development coach, isn't he? Former Norwich under-23s boss, of course. We'll forget there what he's been doing for the last 2 years or so. But clearly a coach that has a track record of developing Norwich City youth talent, so I'm sure that would have been in their thinking. Let's wrap up then. I'll throw a few quick fire ones at you, Pad, that people asking. We'll start with the Werder Bremen midfielder. There were a few whispers around yesterday. Maxi Eggstein, I want to say, Werder Bremen midfielder, 24. We've had a few questions about those links. It wasn't linking Norwich City specifically, the initial reports. I think they came from a Werder Bremen fan site as well. It's just been mentioned that there is some interest in England, and I think some Bremen fans have looked at the Rashica deal and maybe added two and two and got five. But in terms of profile and calibre and maybe even price, he's one that would tick a lot of boxes.
Yeah, I don't know a huge amount about him, but yeah, the link with Bremen is an obvious one, isn't it? So Given the homework they've done on Rashica, they'd be well aware of this guy. No two ways about it. But I don't really see that one. And as you say, the original source, I don't think was anything that you would constitute a mainstream media actual linking Norwich. I think it was more, could he head to England, and if so, could he go to Norwich type of vibe. So yeah, I wouldn't place too much store by that one at the minute.
Cool. A few people have asked about Todd Cantwell. Any movement in terms of his situation?
Not that we're aware of, no. Villa was the one, wasn't it, this week? But he's been linked to Villa before, so...
he was linked as a central midfielder, wasn't he? With James
Walker, Harry Winks.
Harry Winks, I think, yeah.
Very, very similar players, him and Harry Winks. Yeah, very similar midfield players. So, I don't know, Villa seem to be wanting to buy every single midfielder in the country at the minute. I see they're mad for that Smith Rowe at Arsenal. As well, probably because Grealish is on his bike, reportedly, we see. So they're trying to get their replacements in. But no, nothing with Cantwell. Cantwell is and pertinent because we're discussing about the three behind now. And now Buendia's gone and Stiepermann's gone out the door. I'm not sure you would allow Cantwell out unless the offer is just too good to turn down. So I would think at this stage, famous last words, he will still be part of Norwich's plans for the start of the Premier League season.
Let's end then with Josip Dermić. Obviously, reports from Croatia earlier this week that Rijeka are keen to take him again, but maybe the financials at the moment don't quite make sense. We've obviously seen Leitner and Stiepermann's situations concluded this week. Are you kind of expecting a similar solution with him? I guess you could throw Tim Closer into that and Tom Tribal as well. They're probably the three you would look at now as saying ones that they clearly like to resolve. Do you see those sort of situations ending with a similar conclusion, or do you think there will be kind of buyers for those three players?
It's interesting. I mean, of the three, I think Dermić probably would attract an offer because, you know, he's still, in terms of his career profile, he's still probably capable of doing a reasonably decent job at the right level in maybe one of the European leagues. And he's got the pedigree, you know, what he did before. Yes, he had his injury problems, which is how Norwich were able to pick him up on a free. But, no, I think that little burst he had at Rijeka would, I think, probably have put him back on the radar of a few clubs over there. So, yeah, I think if you're Norwich, you probably would be confident that you could come to some sort of arrangement in terms of a transfer fee involved for him. And again, I know that the wages are clearly were fairly substantial, but at least you'd be recouping some of that if you were to get a transfer fee, having not paid a transfer in the first point. Closer and well, Closer was obviously his heart was set on Basel and it wasn't to be. They didn't take up the buy option, so not quite sure what the future would hold for him. You know, he's I don't know whether you just sort of go back to sort of Germany, Switzerland maybe and find a club there. Or I mean, how old is TK now? Is he 33, 34?
Bear with me and I'll have a look if you're fully.
Whereas Tribal, you know, I mean, he did go and play at Blackburn, but he had sort of persistent back issues. So again, I think his fitness would dictate. With Tribal, I could see more of a 12 months left, kind of Leitner, Stiepermann type of arrangement. And what we can say definitively is those three are not part of Norwich's plans in the Premier League. They won't be getting a welcome back into the fold. You know, you had the story about Andy Hughes, formerly of the Parish, who's going to be coaching those type of players when they come back for pre-season training. So, you know, that's a fairly definitive signal. You're not part of Daniel's Premier League setup. And if you're those players, they're all 12 months out from the end of their contracts, particularly a closer who's, you know, not got much more time on his side in terms of professional football.
33 years, sorry.
Yeah.
I was meant to interject, yeah.
No, that's fine, yeah. So you'd really want to go and get some football in your twilight of your career, wouldn't you? So I think of those three, probably in terms of you asking me, could they get fees? I could only really see it for Dermot. I think the other two would be maybe a mutual agreement. And thanks for everything you've done, but we've moved on.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely stuff. Paddy, thank you very much. I can see lots of questions that we've not been able to get through today. We've been going for over an hour. We've tried to get through as many as possible. So hold on to those. We'll be back again next week. You can come and ask us. Equally, we have our Q&As on a Monday where we can maybe answer more of those kind of questions that you've got. So if you've got those, then hold on to them until then. Thank you all very much for watching. And thank you for watching all of these. They've been well received so far. So we'll keep them up throughout the summer. Hopefully, there'll be something else to talk about next week, as I'm sure there will. The transfer window doesn't slow down, does it? And hopefully we'll be talking about England in the Euro semi-finals as well, which would be nice. Enjoy your weekend, Pad. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you all very much for watching. And we'll see you soon.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.
America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.